briefly introduced myself a minute ago, but Jason Burnick, a regional director for Florida for FCA. This is my, possibly my 20th year of my vocational call to ministry, and it has been as exciting as that might sound. If you're not familiar with how ministry is, it has its ups and downs, and it's a battlefield, and it's constant, and it's been amazing. Talk about that in a second. I don't have as much time as I thought I was going to have, and I really wanted to break into the Word together. But if I got a little bit of time, I'd like to do that after I tell you a little bit about myself. Go ahead and turn to John chapter 4. But I grew up, I think some of you saw my bio, I didn't grow up in a Christian home. Are you living in Orlando right now?
I do, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Are you still playing hockey now?
No, actually I don't.
Oh, I thought you were playing hockey.
No, I actually stopped playing hockey right before I went to high school.
Okay. Do you still like hockey?
Yeah, I still like it. I can't really watch it right now because of the lockout.
Well, Solar Bears, I'm the new chaplain for the Solar Bears.
Yeah,
they play one of the games tonight?
So, are they right here?
Yeah.
So, I should go to the game tonight. It's Friday, so I kind of got to go to a football game someplace. But the if you ever want to meet the team or come out, you know where the RDB is, right? So
they practice
at the maintenance center.
Oh, do they?
So
don't they play at the new center though?
Yeah. Yeah, so practice. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean at the practice.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I grew up in Minnesota. I grew up not playing football. I know football's big here, and as a matter of fact, where I grew up, there's not a lot of people that want to play football. You know, the guys that couldn't play hockey played football, and it's just kind of the way it is, or the way it was. I think it's growing there now. I heard there was a pretty good attendance to their high school games now. But I grew up. I played for a team in high school that was out of 20 years of vocational ministry. They were 16 years of the state champion hockey team, and I was very fortunate to play for them. Minnetonka and the Twin Cities. I grew up in a Jewish home, and so I was pretty excited to hear your topic that you guys were studying. I grew up in a Jewish home, graduated from college, became a believer after college, went to seminary, two master degrees, a master of divinity, and a master of theology and Old Testament studies. Been fortunate enough to teach across Israel a few times. Even taught a course at the University of Haifa on the geography of Galilee and the Jesus trails of Galilee. And when I say a course, it wasn't a full semester course yet. But ministry-wise, we've been very fortunate. I could share everything with you, but I will say that the reason why I played hockey was not because it's the greatest sport in the world, which is the greatest sport in the world. The reason why I played hockey was to get away from a very abusive father. My dad, even though I grew up in this Jewish home, really in my family was more atheist than anything. My mother knew about the abuse, and so every weekend she would send me to live with my grandparents. I grew up in a Jewish community, so sending me to live with my grandparents meant walking distance, because everybody has to walk to the Nebuchadnezzar or to walk to Smyrna. So I was close to home, but every weekend I was with my grandparents. And so I get sent to live with my grandparents, and my grandparents were Orthodox. So we celebrated Shabbat. So I grew up celebrating Shabbat with the Shabbat prayer and walking the temple. But grew up very angry with them. I didn't believe, growing up Jewish, I never believed that Jesus Christ was God. And if he was, I didn't want anything to do with him, because I didn't have anything to do with him. But I loved my grandfather, so I went to temple, I went with them, and he taught me Hebrew at a young age. Growing up, my earliest memory of really questioning the love and character of God was synagogue in the temple. And if you're familiar with, is anybody here Jewish or grown up Jewish? Or, so if you know when the cancer brings in the Torah, everybody stands in honor of the Torah as it walks into the Torah.
So here, I remember standing there next to my grandfather, my grandfather next to me, and my uncle Bert and Uncle Hank. Looking up at my grandfather, he was that little quiet man that we could spend the night communicating, never from just watching a baseball game. Right? I looked up at him and just tears in his eyes. And then I looked over at Uncle Hank. And just tears in their eyes as the word of God was, and I remember questioning, how can they love such a horrible God? Because I never questioned the existence of God, but I questioned God's care.
Yeah.
I'll just be honest, I mean, the type of abuse I suffered when my father was sexual abuse. You know, so for me to play hockey was a ticket away from a mean father, but also to prove how to live. That there is something worthy to love, because even though I grew up with this wonderful grandfather and grandparents that I would call my parents, even though they were wonderful grandparents and in temple and synagogue, I still question the character of God, and hockey became my religion. I mean, if there's a joke in Minnesota, it's a real joke, Minnesota and Canada, but I'm not sure if it's the whole Great Lakes, but you know, that hockey is a religion because it consumes you. If you're any good, it will consume your life. And it's so loved by fans that it's like this religion. Hockey became my religion. So when I busted out my leg, and I have a metal rod that holds my leg together, when I busted out my leg, it wasn't just a career over, it was religion. It was nothing. It'd be my salvation. And that the sound, and when a career is over on ice, you know your career is over when there's players all around you on both teams slapping their sticks on the ice. So I remember laying on the ice and just hearing this and looking over, and you know, in just a moment, a bad mistake on the ice, salvation's over. Salvation's gone. And just thought that there's no way I can do it. Like, I've got to take my own life. I had nowhere to turn. The year that I broke my leg is the same year that my grandfather died, who I loved more than any other person in the world. Same year that my grandmother died. And then just everything was over, and I had nowhere to turn. Career wasn't quite over. I thought it was over. Career wasn't quite over. I got a chance to continue on and continue playing. I lost my edge, so when you lose your edge, you become a coach. And I began coaching at George, coach at George Mason University in Washington, D.C., or in Northern Virginia, Fairfax County. Coached at George Mason, and it was there that my heart was gripped. I knew at the end of the season I was going to commit suicide. I was married, my wife didn't know that, nobody knew that, but that was my plan. And instead of just taking my life before I met this horrible God, I thought I better make things a little bit right here on earth. So I started meeting this pastor, and ended up surrendering my life to Jesus Christ. I was in my kitchen. Just finished. It was a whole weekend of a game, so we had Monday off. I was in my kitchen, and I was putting some groceries away, and I was reading a book called Seven Promises of the Promise Keeper. I was reading this book, and just got gripped by the love of Christ. I mean, I so wanted fulfillment. I dropped on my knees and surrendered my life. I remember the moment, my hands and my face, Jesus, your God, Jesus, your God, Jesus, your God. Whether growing up Jewish or in anger, it was always that rejection of God. Jesus, your God, Jesus, your God. My call to vocational ministry, my call to ministry, came the next 9 months. Now, I didn't get a job, I didn't get employed in the ministry, but I knew I was called to vocational ministry. Because the type of abuse I had, I never slept in bed. I go to bed with my wife, I wake her to fall asleep, I get up, I go in the house, I TV's on, I was lucky if I got 4 hours of sleep a night. I mean, that was a good night. Imagine being my roommate on the road and traveling with me. You know, I was always blamed on me being a goalie. Those goalies are nuts, you know. They're crazy, you know. So, and they are a little. You know, the night of my salvation, I went to bed with my wife and laid down with her. And I was waiting for her to fall asleep. And I woke up to the alarm. God had taken the most dangerous of places, the most fearful of places, and turned it into a place of rest. I woke up and my wife was laying on the bed, and her head and her face on her side like this, looking at me, just tears coming down her face. She couldn't believe that I'd actually spent the night in her. I knew at that moment God could take this painful place, this hurting heart, make this heart stone, turn it into a heart of flesh, and he spoke in Ezekiel. And given him an egg on it. Whatever I got, I'm in. Whatever I got him in, the first thing he called me to do was to leave hockey. And I went to work for Promise Keepers, not right away. I ended up working for Promise Keepers and just sharing my story with hurting men around the East Coast, West Virginia to Boston. And left there, went to South America. The rest is history, but I really want to dive into the word a little bit. So that's my life. There's a whole lot more to everything, but if we're going to be talking about the Jewish perspective of Jesus, when I saw that, I was really hoping to teach for an hour, and then I brought a note there because I was just pumped because, you know, this is what my master's is in, right? And what I taught in Israel and the geography and the land, and you know, I wanted to get passionate. I mean, one of my favorite professors, his name was Jerry Benjamin. Jerry Benjamin was a associate pastor. One of my favorite professors is Jerry Benjamin. Jerry's now a professor of Old Testament theology at Dallas Theological Seminary. I had him when I was at Trinity in Deerfield, so someone said that's in Chicago. So I had him when I was at Trinity in Deerfield. And one of the things I loved about him was that he grew up, not only was he teaching Old Testament theology, but he grew up Jewish. As a matter of fact, he was a rabbi. And as a rabbi, he was studying for his doctorate in rabbinical law, and he came across an old friend that he used to go to temple with that was now a believer, was now a Christian, and saw him in a 7-Eleven, saw him like just thinking ahead, like, I'm not taking up all the time of the story, but it's a story. But so, like getting gas. Anyway, so he sees him there, and they start talking, and the guy says, you know, I'm a Christian now, and Jerry, being a rabbi, thinks, I gotta start meeting with this guy in order to bring him back into the fold of Judaism. He's now in some weird cult, right? So he starts meeting with him, and this guy says, let's meet at this little coffee shop. So they start meeting at this coffee shop, and the two are meeting and discussing, and they're going through all the prophets of the Old Testament and how they point to Jesus as Messiah, and how they point to Jesus as Messiah. And I'm going to turn to something different. So you guys stay and we can get to it. You guys stay there. But and how they point to Jesus as Messiah. And after about their third or so meeting, this guy, his friend, I can't remember him, his friend of Jerry says, you don't believe a word I'm saying. Jerry says, no, I think that you're brainwashed. I think you're twisting it around to make it what you want it to make, and I'm here to take you away from that. You're brainwashed. You're making it be what you want it to be in your head, and I need you to bring it back to Judaism. So this Jerry Benjamin, as a matter of fact, is brilliant. When I say brilliant, I had him 3 different semesters and different courses. He never opened the Bible. He taught the Bible. He just has it memorized. Literally, I don't remember cracking open a Bible. My wife heard him speak one time, and she couldn't believe it. She looked at Leviticus and Numbers and different places, and just, you just want to follow just so you can catch him when he's wrong. He's not wrong. So brilliant guy. So this brilliant man, here's the dialogue that they have. This guy says to him, this
guy says to him, he says, well, would you be willing to at least read the New Testament?
You don't do that, right? I mean, you don't have a New Testament in your home if you're Jewish. I mean, you don't do that, especially if you're the rabbi. But he decides he's going to do that because he's trying to reach this man back to the fold of Judaism. Okay? So he says, okay, well, brilliant, Dr. Benjamin. Here's what he did. He goes home, he has his New Testament. He said, I got under the covers with a flashlight because I didn't want God to see me. Right? And he begins exactly where you think you begin, or we don't begin because we skip the genealogy. He begins at the first page. Matthew. It's a New Testament. Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. Which read the book in Greek, Biblios, of the genealogy. Greek, Genesis. Book of the beginning of Jesus Christ. The son of David. The son of Abraham. This guy begins to weep as he reads. It pulls him. This is not some Western God. This is not some strange person. This is the son of Abraham. This is the root of Jesse. And he could diagram out all the different thoughts about all the different thoughts about what this prophecy means, or this prophecy means, or what Isaiah meant in Isaiah 53, or what David meant in Psalm chapter 22, but he could not refute the very genealogy of Jesus, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And a place where very few people become believers is what drew this rabbi in from being a rabbi in Chicago to being a professor of theology in Chicago was the genealogy. Root. David, son of Abraham. And there's no way you can end up with Jesus as Messiah without this genealogy. And there's no way this can happen fast. Book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David. He made a great, Dr. Benjamin made a great statement one day, and it was that the study of the life of Christ must be studied through the lens of the Jewish perspective in order to truly understand who he was and what Jesus' mission was. I believe him. From the fall to Abraham and the call to all generations being blessed, to the prophets pointing to the Messiah and the genealogy being called along, to the great Magnificat of Mary, when she says, remember the Magnificat in Luke chapter 2, when she says she's blessed just as the whole man, just as the word of God had been told from the prophets and through Abraham, the world be blessed to the very John the Baptist baptizing the Messiah Jesus. To us, the study of Jesus, we must be with them if we understand that. We have time to go on that. Most of what I wanted to do. If anybody needs to leave, is it okay if I just go a few minutes long?
You've got till 9.
Right.
Don't say that. Go lower.
So we're done at 9? Done at 9. Well, then don't go to fear, but Isaiah chapter 4. I think I can. My favorite, I say this a lot, I was a pastor for many years. I got teased a lot by our congregation because it seemed like every week I had a new favorite. Because I adore the word. But Isaiah chapter 40, which is considered the gospel of Judaism, beginning of verse 1, says, comfort. Comfort. Nachan is the word for comfort.
Comfort. And by saying it twice, it's just when we in Judaism, if you remember when you remember your Hebrew studies, but when a word is given twice, it becomes very tender. I mean, it's like when Jesus sits down at the Mount of Beatitudes. It's like Jesus has a seat as a rabbi to begin his speech. We know that in English it says that he opened his mouth and began to speak. That seems kind of silly to us. Well, it's not the ventriloquist act, right? What's happening in Hebrew is it's beginning, is the word speak is given twice. The translators went, let's just have to sit, because even if sad is a pathway, let's turn this up. So, this is very tender and very comfortable. This is what I would do if my daughter Hannah was crying in the middle of the night, my little girl, as I would come to her and I would speak to her this morning. It says, you are God. Comfort. It says, you're God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her. The word cry, the word is the word dabar. And now we go from comfort. Speak tenderly, but loudly. It's like if Hannah was in a dream and she was having a nightmare. I don't just come over and slap her in the face a couple times. No, I come to her and I speak tenderly to her, but enough to wake her up. It's like this word comes from God through the prophet Isaiah, and God is saying, oh, comfort, Nakan, comfort my people. Wake them up. During the time in history of Isaiah 40, I mean, there's Babylonian wars going on. There's an exile. Things are very difficult. And God is saying, you know what? In the midst of whatever you're facing, in the midst of the job loss, in the midst of the hurt, in the midst of the back pain, in the midst of the family issues that you're going through, He's still speaking. He's still coming out to you. He's still, like, in the midst of the abuse, God is still at his hand. And he's still speaking. He says, comfort, my people, says, your God, declare tenderly to Jerusalem that her warfare is ended. The war is not going to go for another 4 years. God is saying, my work is on the way. The war is over. So the worst is over. It's time to wake up and know that I'm here. He says that her iniquity is pardoned and that she has received from the Lord's hand double for her sins. The worst is over. And I'm not living. And catch this, because if you're familiar with John the Baptist, this should come alive. A voice cries. So we go from very tender, but firm, waking us out of slumber. And as the slumber comes, as we get away from our pity parties and our hurt and everything else in our life, it's like we get away from this. Wake up. And then all of a sudden we wake up. And then there's this voice crying. And it, even in Hebrew, the way the word sounds for cry even sounds like kara. I mean, kara. I mean, this voice is crying. It's like they get woken up out of slumber. The eyes open up. They're out of the bad dream. And they look up and there's this voice crying out to them in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord. Does that sound like John the Baptist? A voice cries in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord. Love this. If you're a runner, you'll love this. It says, in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be lifted up. Every mountain and hill be made low. See, that's why I said all the runners like that. The valleys are lifted up. The hills are made low. The uneven ground shall become level. The rough places a plain. And the glory, the Shekinah of the Lord shall be revealed. And all flesh shall see it together. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. I mean, there's this moment of Isaiah 40, the gospel to the Jews, saying, comfort, Nakan, my people, in the midst of whatever you're facing, God's at work. But wake up and hear the voice of God calling you and drawing you. It's no wonder that the crowds came from all over to hear John the Baptist speaking when they heard there's one crying out in the wilderness. They knew people that were coming, knew what was happening. there's somebody crying out in the wilderness that there is a highway, a pathway of some way to meet God. In John chapter 4, he's met.
There are, I'm going to close up here, and I got a minute. There are three greats in Scripture, right? Do you know what they are? The Great Commission, the Great Invitation, come to me, all you're weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. See the other great? The Great Commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And I wrote a paper once that, there's a fourth. It was a great commission. Go eat, baptize, and teach. The great invitation to go, to come to Him. The great commandment to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbors, your soul. And the great introduction was the crying out, the kara, crying out, a voice in the wilderness is drawing. And then there's Jesus. And a voice is heard. Saying, this is my son. I'm going to get the baptism. This is my son. I'm well pleased. I'm well pleased. The Spirit comes down like a dove. And up comes Jesus. The Trinity is there at the baptism. Got the Son, the blood of the water. Got the Spirit descending on him. And a voice says, this is my son. I'm not well pleased. Jewish perspective. Jesus. Any study, Jesus, I'm not promoting Messianic Judaism. I'm just saying any study of the life of Jesus Christ must be looked through the lens of the Old Testament. Must be looked through the lens of Jewish history. Part of what Gretchen and I do, and what you're called to do as well, is we want to be that Haran campus. We want to be that light, that one that's been called out to the campus to somehow wake the students up, to wake the faculty up, to shake them. Come on, listen. Come out of the slumber and listen. There's a one true God. And whatever you're faced with, He's the one that heals.
My last 6 to 9 months as a pastor, listen to me at all sometimes in the past, I say this a lot because it's painful. About 6 to 9 months of the past year, I was with the funeral of a teenage boy that had shot himself. I was counseling a family whose daughter was sexting, taking pictures of herself and sending pictures of herself around the campus looking for drugs. I was counseling another family whose son was bedwetting because of the severe bullying he was facing. As a pastor, I was just begging God. How can I preach these kids? The greatest American mission field is the campus. We can't sit by in our slumber and not wake up to the fact that we need to reach them. We're losing. The battle, we're losing. But we know God's a victory. I can't walk on any campus and say, we're ahead. And I travel around the state. So I'm going to do a key for you, and that's an easy thing to follow. I tease you, welcome to the board. We need you on the board. We need you to serve. We need you to be a part of the voice that's crying out in the wilderness. Time to serve. I mean, you asked the question, I'm over my time, but you asked the question, when's the first time that you were got involved with FCA or went to an FCA meeting? Hey, I'm going to, when's the next time you're going to do it and get involved? The cost is too great, the stakes are too high, and it's exciting that we as a group get the opportunity to be the voice of the crying out of the world. There's ways to get involved. I know you guys got to get to work. To get on our home team. We got a run coming up. If you're a runner or a walker, we need you to get involved in our run walk. It'll help us quite a bit. If you feel led to be on our board, help us make decisions to reach the campuses, that'd be to help us out in that responsibility. King Jesus, Father in Heaven, God, you're beautiful and you are adored.
You are above all, and you are all in all, and we surrender to you. God, I thank you for this morning, the opportunity to dive into your word and not have any notes, not to follow my notes at all, or even follow any notes, but just want to dive into the word a little bit. And God, I pray that you will challenge us and we'll hear you. Lord, as we go about our day today, I pray, God, that we'll bring you glory. That you'll be pleased as you look at our lives with what you see and hear in our life. And Father, I pray that we not compromise you in any way. You're almighty. You are our Nakam. You are our comfort. We love you in Jesus' name.
Just wanted to ask you one final question here. Most of us, our kids go to public school. Joe's kids.